1998, we're interviewing David Noyola, who is the county commissioner-elect and former city councilman in the city of Corpus Christi. This is a personal request. If you can keep the interview mostly in English, it's easier for me, because if you mix up the Spanish, then I got to translate it and transcribe it. So you have signed the deed of gift form, and you know what the interview is for, right?
Yes, sir.
So you're willing to do that?
Yeah.
All right. You got to talk louder.
Yes, sir.
There's four parts, you know, the biography, who is David Noyola, the family, you know, the parents, where they're from, their names, brothers, sisters, your own children, and so on. And then your early childhood, where you grew up here in this Molina barrio, growing up in Corpus, and then your political career. And at the end, I'm going to ask you issues and opinions. So why don't we start out with biography, you know, who is the Molina family, where do you fit in, where did they come from, when, why?
Well, this neighborhood was mostly like a farm, a ranch. Molina was a man that had all this property, all this land, and it was like a ranch, and then it started developing into a community. Actually, the Molina Street started a couple of blocks away where I live at. I live on Valdez Street. This man inherited all this land, hardworking family, and then it became, what do you call it, Paul Cox, a developer. Started developing the community.
Do you know how to spell that name?
Cox, C-O-K,
oh.
C-O-X.
Cox.
Paul. Paul.
I thought
Paul.
That was one last name.
No, Paul Cox.
Okay.
And he started developing the community, named like Jose Street, and then Ramona for individuals that worked for Mr. Paul Cox. And of course, my family moved here, one of the earliest families here in, back in the 50s. My dad, Marcos and Lucy Noyola. My dad from Laredo, and my mom from Kingsville, then and from McAllen, from Nevada, La Calle 23 in Dallas. And I have four brothers and two sisters. My oldest brother, Marcos, he's a teacher, and Tom Brown here in Corpus. Then my other brother, my sister, Mary Thompson, she works for counselors in Del Mar. Then I have my brother, Danny. He's the superintendent of West Los Angeles School District, actually the Molina subdivision. Then it's myself, David, political consultant, and then also I work for the neighborhood centers of Corpus Christi, where I'm in charge of the recreation program and also the community service program, where our youth get into trouble. They have to go through my program. And then I have my sister, Isabel Martin. She's a probation officer for the county here, the state. And I have my youngest brother, Jesse. He works for Southwest Airlines. It's a family that's always been involved in this community, not only in the Molina area, but throughout Nueces County. My parents have taught us about standing up when it's right, speak up, don't be scared, and do what is right, and remember the phrases that, like, never forget where you come from. That's the first priority in our agenda. My mom was a school teacher.
What was her name?
My mom, Lucy Noyola.
What was her maiden name?
Garcia.
Where, they came from McAllen?
From McAllen, yeah.
And her parents, your grandparents?
Marcelo Garcia, my grandparents.
And the grandmother?
Isabel. My uncle was a musician. He used to, back in the 50s, recorded for La Compañía Falcón, Rafael Ramirez. He was well known. He had a dueto, Marcelo and Aurelia. That was my uncle. So it comes our family music. But the most important thing that my grandmother, Isabel, she was very involved in the community. She would give piano lessons. She would organize benefits to help different charities in the valley. In fact, I have an article, actually a flyer in the 1948 when we were helping Dr. Garcia to raise money for a hospital in McAllen. So I think that's where I got it from my grandma.
And do you know where they came from before McAllen?
Originally, I think they were from Kingsville. I think from Kingsville. Nogales, my grandfather. My grandfather used to play baseball. That was a story, you know.
Nogales, Arizona? Or?
No, aquí in Mexico. But I can still remember my grandfather. He used to come down and visit us in the summer and play dominoes. But it was hard to beat him. The guy was sharp. And he was always a person you would look up to. Tall man, sombrerito. Don't drink, don't smoke. Very respectable, about 6'2", big man. And of course my grandmother, I was very young when she passed away and she had a stroke. I still remember when I used to go to her house in 23 in Dallas Street, there in McAllen. She was in a hospital bed. And all I can remember from her when she would say, corazón, corazón. That's all I could remember from my grandmother. But our family, you know, has been involved for many years in this community.
Okay, and then your family, your own personal family?
My family, I have I got two boys and two girls. My youngest daughter is a junior here in West Los High School. Straight A student.
What's her name?
Her name is Lisa Ann Noyola. She's a junior in high school here in West Oso, a cheerleader. In fact, she's going to Chicago. She's gone to New York with different organizations. They invite her for different scholars, like for engineer schoolings and stuff like that. I think she wants to become an engineer or a doctor. So then I have another daughter, Laura. She's in the sixth grade. She loves to sing. In fact, she's done some commercials around my campaign. Something touchy, you know, for the family. And then I have a son, David Michael. He's in the fifth grade. Good baseball player. Got it probably from his dad or his grandfather's side. And my youngest, Jesus Lavi. He's 3.5 years old. And I think that's the one that's going to be a politician. I don't know why, but I feel it, you know. Everywhere we go, he's always, you know, smiling and shaking hands and a little bit outspoken. I think maybe he got it from his dad or maybe from his mom. I don't know.
What's your wife's name?
Janie.
Where's she from?
From Corpus. In fact, she just lived across the street from me. She was my girlfriend in high school, in elementary. My sweetheart many years back. And she's a legal assistant for a law firm. In fact, she worked with some big law firms in Dallas and Houston. You know, she lives here in Corpus.
Okay. Any other significant thing about your family you want to talk about?
You know, the thing is that, you know, you remember when you were a kid, cold is now without no air condition. Right across the street, you know, the familia Benavides, Carlos Benavides, Guadalupe Benavides, very successful businessmen in Houston and family, they all been involved in the community also. You know, remember times when you were young that, you know, right there in the living room, the windows used to be open, the doors used to be open, and at noontime, you know, Carlos or Freddie, his brother, would come over and through the door and say, hey, let's go outside and play. We couldn't go out, we have to take a nap. That was the costumbre from our family. My dad would not allow us to play on the street. We knew we played baseball on the street. At 5 o'clock, my dad was coming from work, so we had to pull in inside the house, you know. But the thing is that, you know, when you have the familia unida, I think that's important. There's some of the problems we have in our community that is lacking. You can blame administrators, you can blame teachers, you can blame counselors, you can blame anybody, but I think it all starts at the house. It's important that, you know, it's like once you walk out of this house, that door, you're on your own. You make your own decisions. You know, I hang around with all different kinds of people. But I knew if I would get in trouble, you know, I remember what my parents taught me. Your name is important. No nombres, you know, don't mess it up. Because your friends are not going to be there. And that's the thing that you treasure for the rest of your life, and you try to encourage other students, the youth, communication. I think it's important. We need to communicate more. If we do those things, I think we have a better world.
What did your father do?
My dad was he worked for a clinic pharmacy. He was a driver. He would deliver medicines to hospitals or to homes. Back then, my dad used to earn like $40-some a week. And it was tough.
Yeah, large family.
Yeah, and then he bought a second Cepedia for $40-some. But an investment that he did, you know, it was well spent investing in our family. It's like, you know, reading, you can travel any part of the world. I mean, you want to go to South America or, you know, learn something about different cultures and stuff like that, just grab a book. I've been to New York and I've been to, you know, London, you know, by reading, you know, and it's important. And that's one thing we need to encourage our kids, you know, have that vision that if you want to become something, you can do it if you want to. There's no escomodantes que you can't go because there's no money, you know. There's different places you can apply for grants and stuff like that, scholarships also. But it's, you know, it's something that, you know, the family value is very important.
Now you said this area was the West Oslo School District.
It is the West Oslo Independent School
District. Almost Molina Barrio?
Yeah.
So is it a segregated school district? Is that why they created it?
It's an independent school district.
But is that why they created it?
Yeah, it was back then by Bohemos, what do you call it? Americanos.
Bohemians?
Bohemians, yeah, that's what it used to be. You know, it was a different, it was way out there, like going to Old Brownsville Road. They used to drive us, buses to school.
Old Brown, what?
Old Brownsville Road. Way up there by going like toward, going toward Driscoll. The school doesn't stand anymore there. The property's there. The only thing that's still standing part of it is the old gym. My brother's attending to those schools. I remember Danny, my brother. He was in this program we call FFA. I used to go with him on the weekends to feed his pig, you know. But then after that, the majority of the board, it was white. And then when years started changing, that's when they moved it here to, within the neighborhood, the schools, you know. Now you have John F. Kennedy Elementary, then you have Carl Allen Elementary, Skinner Elementary, and then you have West Oslo Junior High and West Oslo High School. That was done back in 1970-71.
Well, why wasn't this made part of Corpus Christi ISD?
Because it always, you know, I think the people that live here for many years have always had their independence. You know, it was like, I told you when we come into my house, the dish, the division, right across the street from the dish, it used to be a landfill. So we used to sleep here and it smell. I mean, that feeling, it was bad, you know. We had the landfill right here, services, it was like bad. Dr. Garcia walked the streets here. He was my doctor. But he was always a motivator for me to organize, to get better streets, better drainage. Because Dr. Garcia did a lot for this community.
Was this part of Corpus Christi?
Yeah.
Back then?
Yeah. But it was always an independent school district. We had our own school. Compare, it's like you have CCISD, then you have Tolosa Midway, Far Bluff, Cal Allen, they're independent school districts. But it's within the city, but they're independent.
But this was the only one that was all Mexican predominantly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So okay. It's, you know, it's pretty interesting. You know, like if you go to Cal Allen, Tolosa, it's, now it's become to more of a mixture. But here's always been Mexicanos and Blacks.
Well, the Blacks live out in this area.
Oh, yeah, it's like right now, if you go, for example, on Barrial Street, this side of Barrial and Valdez where you're at, all this side, this section, is Mexicanos. Then on Barrial, the other side where we came through, is Black. But there was a division on the street in the middle. Mm-hmm. But now, as time has passed, now you got a couple of Mexicanos that come in, that originally not from the community, but they come into the barrio, now live in that part of the section where it's Black.
Okay. How about your early childhood? I guess you went to the Oslo School District. You went to Skinner Elementary here, two blocks down, no?
Yeah, it was.
Tell me about your childhood, your schooling. Any important things? You played football? Did you play baseball? Did you have good teachers, bad teachers? Your favorite subject? Did you graduate? When did you graduate?
Well, I had some good teachers and bad teachers, and I'll be honest about it. I had an experience that I will never forget, that I will treasure for the rest of my life, and I'm in first grade. Good grades, but I flunked. I think it was the teacher that was really attached to me. That's an experience that my parents even went to talk, and they still, you know, I couldn't get promoted to second grade. My grades were good, you know, and there was some kind of, like, when you have those teachers, they have their favors. And I'm not going to mention her name, but I saw her not too long ago. She came over and congratulated me, you know, for my race. I never forget that experience, you know. But I was always a leader.
And so you weren't promoted? You were kept another year?
Another year. My parents went and talked to the principal. My grades were there, but they came out with, well, he has stay. Le falta. Whatever. And I'll never forget that. So I always was a leader, and I was involved in athletics, you know, in school. I remember when I was in the fifth grade, I was playing with the sixth graders. Baseball, football. Of course, I was a little bit of a troublemaker also. I was always after the patrol, you know, the patrol guys that would patrol, you know, the school would protect, you know. I was a person that I was, you know, everybody would follow me. Then when I went, I'll never forget this, when I went to junior high, seventh grade. It's like when you go from elementary to junior high, it's only a block away from school. There was always the guys that were already in the eighth grade, they were the so-called pachucos, the leaders. And I was the leader of the school when I was in the sixth grade. So everybody was telling me, well, you better watch out when you go up there, they're going to be waiting for you, you know. That's fine. So I walked in the first day of school, and I never forget, went to the back restroom there at the junior high. And I still go there once in a while to remember that. I walked into the restroom, and there were a bunch of friends, camaradas. And they knew who I was. But they never touched me. They never messed with me. Of course, they met with some of my friends. But those are some experiences, you know, that... but I was always, you know... I'll never forget then, when I jumped, you know, to high school. My freshman year, you know, I remember Coach Rocky Garcia. Very disciplined man. Coach my brother Marcos and Danny, my brothers were athletic also. So as a freshman, he was expecting me to play. And I was more into that. I wanted that, no, you know, I had some better things to do than play sports. So he was.
What were those better things?
Well, you know, when you're young, I was working. I used to work in a restaurant, peeling potatoes. It's in junior high. Get out from school and then go work in a canine restaurant on board. But I said, Coach, I'm not going to play. You know, I said, no, but, you know, your brothers play. You know, a tradition. So I said, no. So I went out for football, and I quit. I played freshman baseball for Whistles, and I quit. I was too active in other things that I didn't know. I was looking for, well, do I make money? Have to work when I have my car as a freshman and stuff like that. And I also had a good experience, you know, the printing class. And I never forget this, and it's something that brings you memories also. It was the first year they introduced training in West Oslo. Brand new equipment. The instructor, his name was Joe Martinez, and he's still the teacher there in West Oslo training. And I go visit him, and I still give him some business now for the school. I remember he came out today when they would give you the work order. Loyola, this is the job you got to do. Salinas, so and so, and Johnson, this is your work you have to go produce. So I would do my work. But I remember when he came down to report cards, I didn't get the grade I think I deserved. And then some of my classmates felt the same way. So I said, well, we're going to boycott it. He said, what? I said, what is it? We're going to do it. So in the mornings, we go into class, and he would come in and give us instruction. This is what you got to do. But I already got together with a group that were half Mexicanos and half black. I said, nobody's going to stand up. I'm going to do all the talking. We're going to boycott them until we change our grades. So what did we do? He comes in and gives out the work order and says, okay, let's go out of work. And he turns around and nobody moved. And the first thing he turned around, what's going on? I said, we're not happy with the grades. He said, you need to work so and so. This is what you got and the credits, you know, so. I said, nobody's going to work. So well, I'm going to call the principal. His principal's name was Mr. Ed Baca, a former football player from UT, University of Texas. Big, tall man, maybe about 6'7", Americano, big man. So he came into a classroom. It was
separate. The last name, Baca?
Ed Baca.
But he was Anglo?
Yeah, Ed Baca. He played for UT. He was a roommate of Tom Landry back then.
Okay.
Big guy. It reminds you, right? So the guy comes in, and he always had his head. Never see you in your eye. Don't look over there again. But what's the problem? So and so on. I said, you know, we feel that the grades were not proper. They were not going to work. So we got into trouble. We came out to some kind of agreement that, of course, he didn't change the grades, but some of the rules were changing. And then after that, I never forget that I got about half an index small cards. Put it in beside the machine when the instructor was going to get started to give us the directions how to operate the machines. The thing went out there, you know, and Legazio remembers that. You know, some good experience, you know, but football games on Fridays.
How old were you when you led that first boycott?
I was maybe about 15.
Okay.
Then I was involved with, at the age of 15, I was involved with Little League. In fact, Universal League, my brother started back when I was about 11 years old. We used to play down here behind the school and there was no lights. The fans was open. We had no fancy beer at home, right? We only had a white line. The concession stand was a mesquite with a carpa, with a tent. That was our, you know, that's where we can get our snow cones. So the following year, we moved it to across the street from the Boys Club in Greenwood to Heifer's Francis friend, Paul. She helped us get the property from the state, and that's where we developed our baseball. And then at the age of 16, I was an assistant coach of the All-Stars, player agent, and at 17, I was the vice president of the Little League. So I started very young. I used to walk from, after school, I would walk across the dish, and I had the keys for the facility, you know. I used to coach, I used to umpire, water, cut the grass, but I started very young. I always liked to, you know, be involved and helping.
And working,
you know. At the K-9 restaurant, it was a very popular Mexican restaurant on Port. It was better known for his smoky burgers. It had some kind of a flavor on it. It was very nice. I started peeling potatoes there in the back. I replaced the guy that used to work there. He passed away, so they applied again to the job. But there were stories that the guy would appear at night. And I was the fastest potato peeler in Corpus. I tell you, but when I, because I want to get out quick.
Before he got the
night? Yeah, before he got night. And those guys, the other guys were older than I was. And they would go through the back. There was a little, there was a theater, the golf theater, a drive-in. From down there, we said, canteen class, all that stuff. There was always packing. Those people come by hamburgers and fried chicken and come out on all that stuff. And those guys that worked with me, we went to the back and started scratching. And I would pull the potatoes as fast as I could. And then from there, I got promoted to, I was the first guy to work in the front with the ladies in the front kitchen, you know, taking orders and stuff like that. But it was a good experience, you know. I think I've always been a leader because sometimes I get angry when you see injustice to our people, especially the people that can't defend themselves. I had a good accident when I was in my senior year, where we had the program we called DECA. We'd go half day to school, and then half day you would work. I used to work for Skaggs Albertsons up here down in Aspen, and I had my supervisor, she was Mexicana, but she thought she was white. And I was a person, there was me, and there was another guy named Lupe Perez, from a big guy, football player, worked with me at Albertsons after school, half day. And the supervisor, and she said, well, if I hear more than you talking Spanish, I'm going to fire you. I said, you can do whatever you want to, but I'm going to talk Spanish. Thank God I can talk Spanish and English. So I continued to go to soccer. Now I'll get out of soccer, you know, I would sack the bags, and that was. The other guy said, well, I need somebody to help me at night to stack the cans and stuff. So I was working a lot of hours while I was a senior in high school. And I never forget that there was this beautiful blonde lady with green eyes, nice looking lady. Was having some problem with a register, with a lady that was, you know, she was buying some groceries. And guess who they called? They called me. The lady was from Mexico. Beautiful blonde hair, couldn't talk any English. So that my supervisor, my boss called me to be an interpreter. And I did it, and I said, I turned around, I said, did I tell you? So she never messed with me again, you know. But this is some experience that, but I was willing to challenge her, you know. But it's always been one after another one, you know. Some things we have to do that I think is fair for people. Sometimes nobody wants to take those stands, and I think you're a good example. That's what motivates me, even if I'm the only one to do it. Like you get criticized, but there's things you have to do for the rest of your life.
So when did you graduate?
1977 from West Los Angeles. It's a pretty, you know, I dropped out.
Did you drop out?
Yeah, I dropped out of school. It was my junior year, I dropped out. Sophomore year, I dropped out. You know, because I was having a lot of problems in school because I was always in trouble. I was always a leader. I was swimming in everything. So I got tired. I said, well, I'm going to get out of school. So I started working for Cameron Iron Works. It's the same company that used to be out there, I think, in Houston, but they had one here in Corpus, out here on Alameda Street. I was a young kid, and I started working, and I had my own department. I was in charge of making the screens and doors, patio doors. And throughout the summer, I said, you know what? Chale, I'm going back. So I went back to school.
What did your dad think about that?
Or
your
mom? It was bad. It was a tradition from family, you know, to get educated, go to school, you know, and of course, at the time when you're young, you feel like, well, you can do whatever you want to, but then later on, you realize that you're on your own. And my dad would tell me, say, well, mijo, you're going to do this, and you're going to have to get up at 7 in the morning, you have to go to work until certain hours, and it's going to be all a different ball game. So now that I can handle it. So I started working at this place. Mr. Isaac Perez was the one that helped me get the job because he was the manager of the little league and I was the assistant. So he helped me out. He was a big time supervisor. And I worked for that summer and I said, the hell with this. So I went back to school. But I made a commitment when I went back to school. I said, I'm going to change my way of doing things. You know, because anything that would happen in the classroom, no, you know, because I was a troublemaker. Not a troublemaker, but I was always a leader. You know, I always, you know, if there was something that had to be discussed, I'd be in front of it, you know. I remember when we did our senior year, we had a group of seniors that we organized for our senior dance. And then I was in charge of to go meet with Roberto Pulido, I'll never forget that, on the club casino in Port, to talk about the monies and how much they would charge for our senior dance. And it was myself and another guy named Rene Salinas. We went to this club casino, and it was a pretty heavy casino back then, club. So Pulido was playing, and after that, in intermission, we went outside, and we talked about our contract, and I signed it without approval of nobody. So it was my responsibility when I went back, we had our meeting, our senior meeting, they wanted to get Tony La Rosa, and I said, what for, man? I said, Roberto Pulido is the best deal we can get. So I convinced the majority of the classmates of mine, and Roberto Pulido played for us.
Were you the class president, or what?
No, I was just the guy they sent me to talk to Roberto Pulido, because they knew I could, you know, deal and wheel the right way, I think, you know, because I was always on top of everything. They needed something, Noyola. So I signed a contract that night. So we had a meeting and there was a little bit of arguments, and you know, oh, this and that, you took it on your own. I said, well, what can you all do? You want it, you don't want it. And some of the others said, well, we went to La Rosa because of our parents. I said, I understand that, but this is for art. We are graduating. So I convinced him we did it that way. That night, Roberto Pulido was contract for 3 hours. Back then, he used to charge us $300 an hour. And after a couple of drinks, I remember we had a big bottle, and all the friends were sitting there. It was all one guy sitting to one side and the girls the other direction. That's the way it was. Our days were sitting with the other girls while we were sitting by our own. We were having to have a good party, a good time to dance. And close to 1 o'clock, I knew the time was getting over, and they said, you know what, this all fishing is more money. So I came out with $200, and I took it to Roberto Pulido, and I said, well, Roberto, here's $200, play for 1 more hour. He played for 1 hour. You can ask Roberto Pulido that story, and he remembers that one, but I was always in front of everything, you know, but a good experience. I go to the high school there, and I still remember when I walked in the hallways, and, you know, it's one of those things that, it's an experience, you know, but it doesn't matter, you know. As long as, you know, it's like they say, there might be another chance. And I got that chance.
Did you plan on going to college or did you think about going to college?
I went to Delmore and I never got a degree. You know, at the time I got married. I said, no, you know what? I just, you know, most of the time I was passing it there at the student center, checking it out who was coming, who was going, you know, but I quit and I got married and I never went back to school, you know. The education that I learned it on the street, the hard education, you know. But I encourage everybody to go to school, go to college. But it's never late. It's never late, you know.
So this was another marriage?
What?
This was another marriage?
Mm-hmm.
Who was that person?
The same person that I married the first time.
Oh, you married the same one twice?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, all right.
So the thing is that, you know, it's important to go to school and get an education, you know. I remember when I ran for council, I was in a LULAC meeting. The guy, the opponent that I was running against, the guy had degrees from here to Mexico. It reminds me like a Ross Perot with figures and data and stuff like that. And you got to see the numbers, you represent the precinct of the district. And I was in a LULAC meeting and the guy stood up and said, so-and-so, this is the degrees I got, this is the experience. And I've been an activist for many years as a young kid. And I stood up and started asking me questions and I started telling him, well, I'm from West Tulsa, blah, 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 my family. my involvement. When the guy, after we finished our actual debate, this meet tongue comes over from the left and says, "Well, Mr. Rana," I said, "Don't feel bad, man." I said, "You know, tell him you have a PhD, man." I said, "Man, I mean, you have learned the hard way, the experience that you stood up for, fighting for the rights of people." And from there, they labeled me as a PhD on community service. And even in this time of this race, one of my opponents, when I ran for county commissioner, made the same remark. He even called me a doctor, you know. But it was something, maybe as a joke. But people knew what I stand for, you know, and it's hard. That's why I encourage everybody to go to school.
Why did you go to that LULAC meeting, or what attracted you to LULAC?
I went because it's like a public forum to hear from the candidates. Some of my advisors told me not even to go because I'm not even a LULAC. I don't believe in LULACers. But I went to show them that I have guys to go into their own territory. I knew they were not going to support me, but still I stood up and I said, "You know what? I know who you are. I know what you all stand for, but still you also have some problems." I said, "We need to do this and this." And I told them what they should do. And they looked at me like I said, "Well, dear, you're a little bit crazy." But you know, there was some of the experience that I went with LULAC. I never became a member. Up to this point, I'm not a member of LULAC.
How about GF Forums?
I just became a member of GF Forum about a year ago. You know, I love the works of the doctor, what he did. But you know, there's some other areas that I think that we should be working on. I have a big concern. The same way as LULAC. LULAC was one time boycotting Bay Fest for some turkey legs. And I got a hold of the president and those guys, and I told him, I said, "What the hell are y'all doing, man?" I said, "No, there's better issues in our community than fighting Bay Fest for a turkey leg because they won't let you sell them." I said, "Well, we got to go into the schools and help and organize the students to get educated, to go to schools. How can we give scholarships, you know?" That's why I never became a... Leo Herrera was a city councilman. That's the guy I replaced him, a good friend of mine. He was always saying, "You know, I pay your dues." I said, "Even if you pay my dues, I won't become a LULAC." You know, and I never, with all respect to him. Of course, we have worked hand in hand in some projects, and some other ones we have worked against each other.
Now, in the 70s, of course, there was Raza Unida around, and before that, the Mexican Youth Organization. Did you ever hear of any of that?
I did, you know. But, you know, it's like when you're at that age, you feel like, maybe that's what some of the founders remember with the union. They say, "Well, this is what's going on with this organization. I don't want to be a part of it. I want to get educated. I want to live my life. I want to have a job and go and do what I have to do and come back." You know, this is some of the problems that we have, you know. It's like the stories that I read from the Renzo Nia part. You know, I had the opportunity to meet Renzo Muniz. And exactly what happened to him.
The guy he's out of this barrio, no?
He's off from close from here, you know. But he got into the wrong ropes. To me, I think it was a setup, I don't know. But the guy opened the doors. You know, y'all did, La Raza Unida. And then this is the power struggle that we have now, like you have the Mexican-American Democrats. You know, the only thing they changed is names. Now you have the Tejano Democrats. Why? Because the powers are losing here. They want to start a new organization. And it's the same thing as you have in schools and different organizations. But I think the biggest problem we have, we are Raza. It's like you talk to an individual and say, you know, "I'm David Noyola." And then it comes out, "Jose Rodriguez." Then you start talking in Spanish, and you come from the lottery, you can mix it. I don't understand you. And that's some of the problems we have, you know. It's good to get them educated, but I think we're losing them in our heritage in one way or another. And that's the year 2000 is a dangerous year, in my opinion, for La Raza.
So how did you get to the city council? What happened between 77, that LULAC meeting, and then when you finally decided to run for the city council? What went on in there?
What happened is that the guy that was there, Mr. Leo Herrera, the city council, I was his right hand and west side organizer. And I've been involved in politics since I was 10, 11 years old.
What did you do then?
Huh?
What did you do then when you were 10 or 11 years old?
Oh, when I was 11, 10, 11 years old, when I was playing Little League, my coach, his name was Johnny Salinas. He was a union leader. Instead of practice, we got to pass out flyers. He was a couple of dollars, you know. And I got to learn, meet Senator Troan, a bunch of those guys back then, you know, when I was a young kid. Hugo Berlanga, Eric Calasas, and the list goes on. So I got encouraged on that. And then when I saw, as the years went by, the unjust discipline example in West Central School District. I got involved by getting involved with other people, saying, what, you run, and you run. And we started organizing a block. And by the time you knew it, we started building that power. And by law, you can only have 3,000 registered voters in one precinct. We had over 3,000 until the Galatas of the Americanos saw the power of Molina was coming in for Carlos Duan, Hugo Berlanga, the school board election. Then the county judge said, well, let's divide it now. So they divided us from precinct 80 with a solid base. So now we have precinct 80 in Skinner. Now we have precinct 78 in Kennedy. So those are the AVM. And they built another precinct also. We got 3 precincts in Molina, 4 precincts now in Molina because of the power we had. And then from there, when I decided, when Leo didn't resign from council, I said, you know, it's my turn. I can do it. You know, I know the system.
What year was that?
I was in 92.
92?
Yeah. So I decided, you know, I'm going to do it. So I got organized.
When were you born?
57.
Okay.
57. But I got organized, and then from there, you know, with no monies. In fact, the mayor that was there, she was praying that I wouldn't get elected. Because I've gone before council meetings a lot of time, you know, asking for certain things on the west side, representing different people from the community. So they felt I was a threat. So I had 2 other guys. It was another Mexicano and another white guy running. And I got into the runoff, and I beat him big time in the runoff. But it was a good experience because when you see it from the outside, and then when you come inside, you start seeing the way the bills are going. Well, we help you do this, or this is the way we can do it, you know. But there were some tough decisions for the city of Corpus at the time. And I was a very outspoken one. I did stand up for what was right for my constituents. If I was the only one who voted that way, I felt it was right for my constituents. But it was a good experience. And then from there...
How long were you on the council?
That's sort of one term.
Mm-hmm.
One term. At the time, my wife had gotten pregnant. And we decided, you know, yes, I'm going to get out for a while. So I decided I wasn't going to run, so I let my constituents know ahead of time for anybody who was interested to run.
That was a 2-year term?
Yes, sir. A 2-year term. So I decided I wasn't going to run. And then at the time, there was a Mexicano, an attorney, that was lining up to run for mayor. And he was a solid guy who could have won, being the first Mexicano attorney, mayor in Corpus. But then we find out the guy wasn't really going to register to vote. Man, that was a big blowout for this community. It was an embarrassment.
Who was
so,
that?
Rudy Gonzalez, an attorney. And the guy told everybody he had voted, and it was an embarrassment. And it was a laugh of the city.
That was in 94?
Yeah, for the 95 rate. The guy, 94, yeah. The guy could have won. He had built a solid base from all across the board. He was a very involved attorney in the community. So it was an embarrassment. So
that come out in the paper?
No, it was in the front page. The guy was not even registered to vote. But that's when you bring in good consultants to do some research. So it happened, and then a lot of people started calling to different talk show radios in Spanish. And they were trying to recruit me to run for mayor. And I said, no, I'm not going to do it. I already made a promise. I'm, you know, to my wife, I'm not going to do it because of the pregnancy. And so I was like, yeah. And I remember it was in Valentine's Day, we went out to dinner. And she knew I had something in my head, you know. We were eating. And she said, you know what? Go for it. Man, she didn't tell me 2 times, you know. I said, yeah, let's do it. So I went and filed 1 minute till 5 o'clock that night. And the committee was in arms because they wanted somebody that would be speaking for them. We were doing good on the, you know, organizing. We didn't have no money. So of course, it'd be hard to raise money. But at the time, I'll never forget that it was on March the 31st. I had gone to Comentarios.
This will be 95 now.
Yeah. I went to Comentarios with Victor Lara, and after that, I was on the freeway. And I was driving, and I heard that there was an accident in Salina. And man, and I keep on listening, and I find out where the location is. So I made a U and went all the way up there, spent about 2 hours. It was the day before my election. I think that hurt me. Dr. Bestek from the university was saying that I was going to come out with 7%. That's what his prediction from the university, running against the incumbent and some other 2 well-recognized Americanos.
Who was the incumbent?
Mary Rhodes. So they were predicting I was going to come out with 7%. But it turned out 19%. It could have been better. But the day before the election, when someone got killed, I mean, the community, the west side, you can come to this neighborhood, not too far away from my house. I mean, cars from everywhere, tourists coming and seeing the site. We had a meeting at about 4 o'clock in the morning at Denny's restaurant. The family, the guys, we were going to work the campaign today on the election. And I said, you know what? No PA systems. I needed the PA system on the west side. I could have made the difference. And I said, we're not going to do it. My respect to the Catania family. And some of my advisors said, you're crazy. You're going to lose. I said, well, if I lose, I lose. But I respect the family. I think it was a dark day in the west side. So I decided no PA system, nowhere. No going house to house, get them out to what like we did before when I went for city council to run off. And we lost. Maybe it was for a reason. And then I became commissioner.
But no, that's too far down the road.
Yeah.
So what did you do between 95 and 98? I mean, you didn't sit still.
Oh, no, I was still involved. I mean, I was...
Where are you working now? What are you doing?
I work with Neighborhood Centers of Corpus Christi. I'm in charge of the recreation program. It's a nonprofit organization, and I run the...
Is it part of the city?
No, it falls in the name.
All right.
Neighborhood Centers. We have three centers.
And where does the funding come from?
United Way.
Okay.
United Way. And we have a daycare program in Molina, down here. We have another one in the Elgin, another part of the west side. We have another one in Margarita, the west side. It's for low-income people that came, for daycare. And then plus we have reading programs, and we have recreation programs, educational programs for the community. But it's under United Way.
Did you have to take a leave of absence or resign to run for commissioner?
No. I was working half and half, you know. Of course, I did take a little absence. When getting close to it, I did take a little absence. But within that time, after 95, I was still involved, helping out the candidates get elected.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the first city council race. How many volunteers did you end up getting, and how much money did you raise? You said you had no money, but you had to have something.
Yeah.
How did you do that?
Well, it was all family. You know, we had a couple of fundraisers, you know. We had we did a barbecue and we raised about $1,600. And of course, everything that was, the barbecue, the chicken, everything was donated. My brother bought one box, my cousin, my uncle, my friend. The place was donated, the bread was donated, the beans, the place where we had it was donated. We raised about $3,000-$4,000, maybe five.
And volunteers, how many did you have?
Just families. That was it, families. And the good thing about it, we had a bunch of students. They helped me out. They believed in my platform. If we had 12 to 13, 15 the most, and walking it was tough. The district was big. It was part from the west side all the way down to the south side towards the lakes, and that's a big precinct. But we made a lot of flyers, and we walked, knocked doors, talked to people. Went to the comentarios, take every advantage we could on the radio, especially in the Hispanic market, because we saw the graphic of the numbers, the majority of about 57% were Mexicanos, and the other percent was a little bit lower. So we know that the representation, it was when they had single member district. So that was the advantage that I had. But I knew I couldn't win the South Side. It was very tough because I've always been a fighter for this part of the city. Now, I think I couldn't get that move across from the South Side.
Can I assume that all you did on the radio was Spanish language radio?
That's it. My budget was very low. I got criticized, but I knew the numbers had to get elected. I knew that part of the city wasn't going to help me. But it was important. But
those Anglos over there?
Yeah, but it was a mixture. But I still needed, to communicate. I went to the public forums, but I didn't have the money to advertise, because it was too expensive. We raised a couple of monies and we did a couple of commercials on TV in Spanish. A couple in Channel 10, 6, and 3. But the budget was very low. It wasn't there, to put in prime time at news or a big show, It was just whenever we could get the $25 spot or the $35 spot. It worked. It worked, but it was...
And then for the mayor's race, how much money did you raise?
Maybe no more than 10, probably. I mean, the monies were not...
10,000?
Maybe about 10, probably about 10.
How did you raise that?
The same way. I had this good organizer. We do barbecues and We got a little get together, and people know we have a little barbecue there at the shop. $5, $10, $20, and of course, I have a couple of friends of mine, attorneys, that contribute for $50, $100, $250, and the numbers would get a little bit higher, but you can't compare big bucks to little bucks. But we did it the hard way, you know. The good thing that, you know, the material was printed with local business. The guys that helped me, like, for example, A-Plus Printing, Jesse Soto, the money was going back to the community. The signs that were done, it was done by a professional guy from the neighborhood. He does it in his house, in the back in the garage. He did professional work. He did for all the big boys in the city, races. But, of course, he gave me a good deal because I was from the barrio, and he gave me a good deal. But it was very low budget, very low, and very hard.
What made you decide to run for county commissioner?
Well, the thing is that, you know, at the time when I was a city councilman, this is pretty interesting because I was a councilman. By law, they had changed the law that if you were in the city, you still can run for other office. So at the time, I decided to run for commissioner against the late David Berlanga. Because of a lot of encouragement, because they felt it was time for a change. So I was a city councilman, I decided to run for county commissioner at the same time. I had to leave my post, my position. So I was in a runoff to Mr. Berlanga. A very close race. And of course, you're fighting establishment, a well-recognized family in the community. And I had a name also, but I didn't have the army, I didn't have the money. But we gave him a good race on that one.
How much money did you raise for that one?
Maybe about 15, probably about 15.
Same way?
The same hard way.
How many volunteers?
We got to maybe about 25. We started building the numbers we're getting there. As an experience, that, you know, did you want to do it? You feel it inside of you, but you know the odds. Really now. The workers, the phone banks. You know where the phone banks here in my house? My sisters, my brothers, my cuñados, my neighbors. You know, here's your list, you call your friends. And that's the way we did it.
How much did Mr. Berlanga spend?
Oh, man, he spent big bucks. I'm not sure the exact amount of money, a lot more than I spend. Commercials, mail-outs. My mail-outs were house by house, directly mailed, knocking the doors. Man. We did a lot of that. But we were in a good race.
So it was a narrow defeat?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mr. Berlanga was glad he was over with. You know, he said, well, I thought it wasn't going to be this hard, you know. But we ran a good, clean campaign on issues, and it happened that it turned out that way. So I returned back to the council. I think it was my spot.
So that was about 94?
94, yeah. I'd only been there about over a year in the council.
Uh-huh. Okay. You know, so then 98 comes around, you're going to try again.
Yeah.
Berlanga did not want to run anymore?
No, what happened is that Mr. Berlanga passed away in 96. 95 or 96, 95, he passed away. So there it goes again. My machine was off the wall to submit my name because the county judge, Richard Borcher, was going to make a recommendation of all the resumes. So I got a lot of calls, and you know, I wanted the position, so I submitted my name. But I was one of the finalists, but I didn't get appointed. Because I felt, and the people in the county knew that I wasn't one of them. That I couldn't, you know, I was always going to fight for other reasons, for my constituents in a different direction. So I didn't get appointed. So then, at the time, it was going to be, he got appointed by the judge, then it was coming to 28 precincts. To the convention, 28 precincts from the precinct from Oasis County, they were going to make the recommendation for the November ballot for the Democratic Party. So I submitted my name, and it was a war, money again against Nana. There were 28 precincts. I had 15 votes that I had lobbied. The day of the election, when the precinct chairs, you know, we made a presentation, the three candidates, I came out with 3 votes. Se vendió. The truth. Se vendió. So we had a big party that night, and I said, well, it's not over yet. So I did a little bit of research, and I said, well, I'm going to run as an independent candidate. I wasn't going to give up. They said, because I believe with the people from the 28 precincts did not vote it. Only politicos within, you know, deals, you know, politics, right? So I said, well, I'm going to do it as an independent candidate. So I went and got my package of information and went to the county attorney, Carl Lewis, and Ernest Brennan, the district clerk, the county judge, and I said, well, this is the way you have to do it. They gave me, I had to pick up signatures, and they were telling me they had to be signatures of people that have voted in the primary. And I read the law and said, no, it could be anybody. And that was my argument. I said, no, it has to be this way. So I followed the orders, and I went to pick up some signatures. I started from the south side all the way down the apartment complex in Everhart, all the way down the west side. We submitted our package, and I got disqualified because 307 were not good, and so-and-so did not vote in. So I challenged the Secretary of State. Was it Tony Garza, I think, Tony Garza. And I put a lawsuit against the state, Secretary of State, and also the county judge, Richard Borch. And we went to federal court because I knew the law was right. So we had a day in federal court, and we were sitting there. And I felt confident. And my attorney, you know, said, you're going to win it. I said,
who was that?
My attorney. It was this guy named, I'm trying to remember his name, a young attorney from Corpus, and I can't remember. In fact, he contributed to my campaign after that. I'm trying to remember his name. It probably comes out after a while. So we went to a federal court, and the judge ruled in my favor. So I had about 30 days before the election. And the paper comes out, and Loyola decides not to run, you know, because I couldn't raise, and I know I needed more than 50,000. And to organize the army, and I know the incumbent, you know, of course he was appointed, we didn't have the money. So I decided not to run. So I left it out, you know, because I couldn't raise no $50,000. But I beat him in federal court to tell them they were wrong, the way they were misinforming me. Imagine they did it to me, imagine what they did to other people they don't even know from left or right. So that was a big victory for me. So we just stay out of it after that. And then he came out to run this year, and I submitted my name. And again, the odds were against me, the machine. The power and money was against this little Mexicano from the west side, from Molina. But I remember Mr. Marroquin. This man would tell me, don't worry about the money. The money sale sobrando. We can beat this guy by working hard. You have a record. You have a proven person that's always been fighting for la raza. We just have to work hard. And there was times that you get you high. There was times that, you know, you feel that the advertising, the mail ads, you know, this, we roll thousands of this here in this table.
Well, why don't you unroll it and show it to
me? You know, my brother-in-law,
put it up by your face.
My dad, my mom. And this is a very generic little, look at this. You know,
put it up by your face.
Very generic. Not no union bug or nothing. It was just, you know,
okay,
a typical print stuff, you know. We roll thousands of them here in this table every night. And I still got some there as a souvenir that I would treasure, probably put them in my office. But we did it the hard way, with no monies. But I felt that, and I've always told my family and my friends, I said, if I get in the bed with this guy, then I can beat him. I can debate the man. And we did it, you know. And the primaries, I came out, I was a high school getter with 35%, and Morales, the other guy who was running, came out with 33, and then Cummins came out with 32, about 69 votes behind Morales. I remember after we closed the polls at 7, we all got here. My sisters were here, and we had a big party at my other sister's house. And I remember I walked in, and my sister, I called her my consultant, she was always on my butt, my sister. Always 5:30 in the morning, you gotta do this, you can't say this, you have to do this. This is what, this is the plan. I walked in and her face was, and they were in the kitchen right there, there was a radio. They were listening to Victor Lara, looking from the courthouse. And I was in third place. He said, didn't I tell you we cannot estimate so and so? I said, Belay, it's early. You know, I mean, I appreciate everything you did for me, and I appreciate there were some friends here, I appreciate everything you all done for me. But you know, I have faith in God. Was acabado. Está plano. So you know what? Let's pack up. Let's go to my sister's house. Let's have a good party. Lo que pasó, pasó. Whatever happens, don't be. I'm not going to be ashamed. We did what we could with what we had. So as I was driving, the reports were coming in, I was still in third place. And I was driving and I was smoking a cigarette. And suddenly I made a turn on Saratoga. Then the next report came in, Noyola's on top. Then I look up and I said, tears. I said, gracias, well, thank God, you know, just keep me there. Just give me the chance, you know, I'm not gonna let you down. So I continued driving, and by the time you know it, Noyola's still on top, Noyola's still on top, and then declared Noyola as a winner to beat the incumbent and then Morales. Good experience, and I got there, the phone was off the wall, and they're waiting for you, they're waiting for you, so and so. My sister did not want to hear the results after she left from here. She went to the airport to pick up my cousin coming from Houston. And how David did in the radio, and she told me the story afterwards. I said, I don't want to talk about it. Don't turn on the radio. We're just going to the party. So I remember when I got there at the courthouse, I had my little army with me, all with Viva Noyola, like the Milano Zapata style. And I want to show you. Viva Noyola. Very nice. I got there in the parking lot, and here comes Lauro Cuella. The guy that defeated John Bell, the Democratic Party. It was a major upset in Oasis County, my race and his race. And I told him at the parking lot, I said, you know what, congratulations, so and so. I said, once you win there, man, I said, I'm gonna tell you, the media is going to go after you. But you do whatever you want to do, but I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. And I think it's what is best. I said, Victor Lara from Quirino, the Programa Comentarios, help me. And I know he helped you. So I'm gonna go talk to him first. If you wanna follow me, follow him. No, that's fine, but this is what I'm gonna do. And this is it. This is the way it came out. You know, the front page, you know, my brother, you know, this is where it is. That's me right there. And that's my campaign treasurer, Ms. Colomo. And this is Lauro Cuella. He bid the Democratic Party chairman. And it was a major upset right there. You know, it was something that he never suspected it was gonna happen in the history of Oasis County. But it was great, good experience. And then there's the other one here. Afterwards, when we had this is again the front page after the runoffs, it's, you know, voters pick up Noyola and Huerta. This is Marty Huerta from the 319 court. There's her husband there, and there's, of course, myself and some other people there that helped me out in the campaign. But it was a major victory. But the good thing about it is that it's like when you come from a barrio like this, from Molina. Since the first time I ran for council, it was because I wanted to encourage the youth from this community, and from any part of the city or the county, that if I could do it, you can do it. But you need to work hard at it. Never give up. Because if I would have given up, I don't know what I'd be doing. I would probably still be working at the neighborhood centers or somewhere else, but I'll probably still be as an activist as I did before for the last 20 years since I started. But it was a good experience, and I encourage, you know, I wish that someday that everybody would have an opportunity to run. That's where you find out who your friends are, where the monies are coming from. And you know, sometimes people don't want to run because they say, well, it takes a lot of time from your house, your family. That's true, you spend a lot of time out, and you should know from your example. But it's all worth it. You know, like, it's like my wife said, well, there's 1,000 people that love you, there's 1,000 people that hate you. So what? Like when I die, I know what I did. No, I did it the right way. But we did it our way to help the people. And it's been a good experience. But if I had to do it again, I think I would do it the same way. But of course, in Africa, we got into to the runoff, money started coming in from left and right. And I didn't need the money.
How much money did you spend this time?
About $20,000. It went
40?
About 20,000.
20?
Yeah.
And that both races or just one?
Just for combined together.
Combined.
Because we came in with five, and then after we came out 15,000 afterwards. The money started coming in from left to right. Then we did a mail-out, and then we did some phone banking to secure the pack to be sure that we were going to get elected. We still did the block walking. We still had the little rallies here and there. But the difference was that we had the money now on the runoffs, so we did a mail out, we did the phone banking. The day of the election, the consultant told me, he said, you're gonna win with 59%. And it came out to 59%. So
yeah,
it was right on the hit, you know. But of course, we didn't take it for granted. We still went out and worked. early in the morning, I was out there and I was listening to Bishop Banquetin. Then half of the day, I came back to the territory, my West Side pieces. And we walked and we took him out and it became history. It was tough.
And you had no opponent in November?
No.
So you're the commissioner-elect?
Yes, sir. Thank God for that.
January 1?
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
You know, what do you plan to do? And how do you plan to work with the judge that you sued before and some of the other people there?
It's like I say, bygones are bygones, but sometimes you don't forget those things. No, you probably have those flashbacks once in a while. But my agenda is very clear. It's a people's campaign. My agenda are issues that have to deal with the precinct. They've been ignored for many years. I'm going to, you know, you can request certain items in the agenda. I'm going to address some of the issues. Before, we didn't have a commissioner saying, well, this is some of the concerns we have. You know, there might be 5 or 10 things in the item that might belong to me. But I want to address, at least, if it doesn't go our way for the people of precinct 2, but at least we tried. Before, you didn't have no voice. Now you're going to have somebody who's going to speak out. You know what? Drainage here, improvement for this building, things like that. For now, for once, you know, they're going to have the communication that, you know, like I said, my house is your house. The courthouse is yours. It belongs to you. Before, you had to have an appointment. My office, you can walk in, even when I'm there, it's your house. It's your building. If Jose Angel Gutierrez will call me tomorrow, my assistant said, well, you have to have an appointment. No, it's not true. I'll be there. I'm going to be a 24-hour commissioner. They call me the pager man, you know, because I'm in call. They call me from different things in this community, benefits of people, victims of houses get burned down, somebody is in jail, bail bondsman, their attorney. I'm always been committed to this community. So there's a lot of ideas. And, you know, for example, I did a little reception for the people up there and Bishop that helped me in my campaign. Beautiful people. We became new families. I got a lot more family now throughout precinct 2 in Nueces County. After we had that dinner, I stood up and talked to him. But the things that I told him was about organizing. Not only toward anything you have complaints toward me, you know, if I don't do your job, you can kick me out. And I told him about fear, because I'm not a politician. I'm just a person like you have a concern. And I can work with you hand in hand. Even if you didn't vote for me, I'm your representative, and I'm going to help you. Even if, you know, you didn't support me, but that's my job. Before I left at dinner, we already had block captains. So I organized it quick. Ms. Diaz, Ms. Ortiz, and the list goes on with Jaime. In case there's some problems with City Hall, pick up the phone, call Jaime, call Ms. Ortiz, and call so and so. Numbers makes difference. Then organize also school board. We got problems in the school district. Boom, this is the way you do it. When we got through it, I said, you know, Mr. Nobody's ever told us this. I said, as instead, you have the power in your hands, man. Use it. We're going to have a Taha meetings once a month. The first meeting I'm going to have, I want to bring the congressman. I want to bring everybody that represents my district and your district. And we're going to put a board. They say, Congressman, this is what the problems that we have with the federal government. How are you going to address them? Senator Petron, how are you going to address them? Jaime Capello, state representative. And then the mayor, then you have, of course, your constable from that area, then you have your county commission.
And your county judge.
And your county judge is going to be there also, my buddy. They're going to be there. And they're going to have to be accountable. And as I tell them, it is time that we as public officials be accountable to the people. And I say it to myself, I don't plan to be there forever. No, I might have another vision down the road. I'm so young. The thing is that do your job. You know, help the people. You know, it happens to a lot of public officials. They get in office and they plan to make it to a political career. I think it's like a horse, you know. Con tiempo, starting getting weak. And I think there's time to replacement and give somebody else a young vision and ideas to come in and help those communities. But don't make it into a habit and it's going to be there for 20 years, you know.
Have you talked to Judge Borchers already?
Oh, yes, we talked. In fact, he was there at my victory party. He was there. Congratulate me and stuff like that. And I told him. He said, what happened in the past, it happened, you know, but I can work with you. I can work with any commissioner, any public official I can work. But of course, I'm not going to forget where I came from. Of course, I'm not going to forget my constituents because those are my priorities. Simple. it's looking better. You know, there's times I might vote with you, there's times I might not even vote with you. There's some times that we're gonna get the gloves on, because I'm gonna speak what is right for the people that I represent first.
Is Nueces County under the unit rule?
Mm-hmm.
Under the unit rule?
Mm-hmm.
So you have a small budget with just your staff. How much staff do you have?
I just have one administrator. Before, they used to have two, but then the commissioner was there before. They got into some kind of lawsuit, got rid of two employees, and now they're not even under civil service. Before, the administrators or the employees that worked for that precinct were under civil service, and now when Mr. Hermosa was there, it was deleted because politics, they had the majority of the votes, 3-2, so they deleted civil service for their employees. You only have one assistant administrator.
Have you looked at the budget?
Oh, I sure did.
So does your precinct get as much as the others?
Nah, it's just very, very close, but there's gonna be some changes. It's about $106,000 budget. It's not big, but there's some areas that I think that it should be increased. I look at the other budgets and other precincts, and why this one has more than I do. And I'm a person that I ask questions. And that's all the people from Precinct 2 wanted, a voice. And now they have a voice, and a voice action for the people.
How do you get along with the JP and the constables for this precinct?
Fine, I had meetings with them. In fact, with the JP, I had a meeting with him and before the election, the runoff. And I said, win or lose, Thursday or Friday, I'll be back. And the guy said, well, he probably won't come back. I got elected, had all the meetings. By Friday, I was there. Went to his office and knocked on his door. He said, you're a man of your word? I said, yes, sir. I said, there's some time we work together, sometimes we won't, but I got to remember that, you know, not only because you're a JP, but you're also one of my constituents. He lives within the community. He does live within the precinct. With a constable, in fact, he was a school teacher here in West Oso. The constable, Mr. Gutierrez. In fact, Gutierrez. He's been there for many years. I can work with everybody, but the important thing is the difference between me and other public officials is that I'm a person, I'm a good listener, and I'm not scared to step in your shoes and you're bigger than mine. There's times that I have to make decisions what is best, and I'm going to do what I think is fair first for Precinct 2. Then, of course, there'll be other issues throughout the county, but it's going to be something to go out of your own backyard first. This is the ones that put you there. And a lot of politicians get there and say, oh, I mean, if I can, in two, four years, I get them back. That's where they're wrong. You need to be accountable to them, and you need to be responsible for the monies. If there's times they call you to go up and do some stuff for them, to speak out for them and rights, I would do it. You know, I'm not gonna be a commissioner that's gonna be involved. I can't get involved because, you know, I'm looking for my futuro, for the future of my political life. You know, I got involved with a kid that was 18 years old, ran for school board. I was a city councilman, I helped him. My advisor, are you crazy doing this, David? I said, no. I said, somebody gave me the chance, somebody believed in me. So I went and knocked door to door for this young kid, Arnold Rodriguez, and became the youngest school board member. And this is the difference between a politician and myself.
So you work in other elections, no? I mean, you got a lot of people in the school board.
Oh, yeah, there's other school board members there in the school board. My sister, years back, was a school board member. I got a lot of people from the community that I've supported. This last election, I had two incumbents, the president and the vice president went for re-election. I was out there, I could have been at the mall, I could have been with my family, and I was out there campaigning for them, and they defeated big numbers. I helped different politicians to get elected since I started at a very young age. I love politics. But of course, there's a time you learn that, it was like I said, a lot of politicians have come into my living room here. I can list them down the line. And I never ask them what they can do for me, but I ask them what you can do for my people. That's the bottom line. If you can't produce, you know, only time will tell. You might win somewhere else in the district, but if you don't produce here in Molina, you will get reelected in this precinct. You might win across the board, but the numbers here will be a lot more different.
Commissioner, you, Commissioner-elect, you have talked about leadership and said you were a leader early on. What is leadership?
Well, everybody has a different point of view. It's like, as an example, if I give you a newspaper, you read it, and I read the same thing, we might interpret it in a different way. to me, a leader, you know, is like, I'll give you a better example. And I'll probably get criticized again. It won't be the first or the last time. It's like, a leader is like Emiliano Zapata said, prefiero morir para que rodillas. That's it, a leader. Are you willing to take, you know, death by the horn and stand up even if the odds are against you? When you go, you a leader, you open the doors to everybody. You teach them the things you learn. A lot of politicians don't want to do that. They want to say, well, I'm going to give you the way how to do it. You know, that's not a leader. That's a game for themselves.
You want to get the door?
You know, but a leader to me is a person that, let's say you have a meeting. You might have 20 people there. And there might be one person in that room. Let's say Mr. Gonzalez. Just listen, but never has an input. A leader is, you know what, Mr. Gonzalez, ¿qué está pensando? What are you thinking, Mr. Gonzalez? Give him the opportunity. And I guarantee you, Mr. Gonzalez has a better idea than you and I and everybody else. But believe in giving him the opportunity. You know, that's what it's all about. A leader, to be a person up front, you know, there's a saying like, you know, there's times that you get up, you go fight a case, and you turn around, where's everybody else? And sometimes they can't solo. But you still don't give up hope, you know? And you think about those things, why am I doing this? You know, when they say, yes, we're gonna help you, yes, we're gonna do this and that. And there are times that you have to go before any government to fight cases, stuff like that. That's all of them. Leader words means, it can be different to everybody.
Okay, well, that's, you talk about a leader, but how about leadership? What is that?
To me is, you know, what yo lo siento, what I feel is that to be there for people, you know. Let's say you come and ask me, I'll give you a better example. Maybe about 10 years ago, there was a guy that lived not too far away from here. He used to be a subdivision. The state comes in, condemns and wants to buy all the properties. And this is me, he kind of says, Charlie, I'm not going to move. They're not giving me my equal price, my money for my value, my house, and so on and so. He calls all the leaders in this community. Nobody wants to touch him with a stick. But then he crosses the dish, comes to Molina, and finds this Mexicano. And I go do the research. And I say, you know what, Charlie, it's not right. The guy had some problems with liens and stuff in the property. After all the money that we're gonna give him, he would give him $20. How are you gonna send six kids in the street with $20? Leadership is, I got up, organized, sent out a press release, had a press conference. I had a generator there. We're not gonna move out. The state wants to come in, they're gonna have to take us all together. Then from there, I went to Austin to the office of Del Morales and knocked at his door. Came back, had a meeting with Nino Gutierrez, the highway department director. What happened with his own? He's a leadership. He got his son relocated. Now he lives in Molina. He's one of my constituents there. And they vote. There's 7, 8 votes there. You know? That's leadership. The only thing is, no, go up there. If you have to knock the doors, you know, don't go there and knock it. Con fuerzas y con ganas. And do it. You know, for me, that's the way I see it, you know.
Okay. Who is the most effective Mexican-American leader today?
Where?
Main place.
Right now, it's tough to say. Seriously, for me, there's been some good leaders, but it's like they say, you know, you have this pie, and it's become that pie that's divided. We don't have a true leader, Mexicanos. Maybe back then you had like a Henry Cisneros, but then there were some faults. Because of those faults, it's become that, well, there's nobody who's ready to take me by the horn. You know, he might did some good things for the city of San Antonio, for HUD. But a true leader? No, I.
Okay. Which is the most effective Mexican-American organization?
There you go again. There's problems. My personal opinion, hay problemas. They might be good in certain things, but there's sometimes some organizations do it for publicity or, for example, for money. Without mentioning organization, you know what I'm talking about. You know, there's cases that, at the moment, like I mentioned earlier during the interview about Turkey Lakes, you know, what do LEC stands for education, promoting, so on and so on. Then you have, I'll give you a better example, you have the Mexican American Democrats. Should promote to help and encourage more Mexicanos to run for public office. Then they endorse a Republican. ¿Qué está pasando? So we don't have it. I don't think so at this moment that we have a solid... You know, look at the black community. Miami, Florida. They say there's an accident between a police officer and a guy, Negrito, black. They burned the town, they organized. They have a summit in San Antonio against drugs and stuff like that. Here comes the administration of the president, and they're organizing this. We Mexicanos, we are the majority. ¿Por qué tenemos? But what do we actually do we have? Yes, we have the numbers. But when in times in the case of emergency, let's say for example, let's have a summit here in Corpus. Bring all the public officials, Salomon, and I can go down the list. To bring somebody big from the White House, the same way they did with other organizations. Can you think we can put them all under one umbrella? That'd be tough. Yes, we might, but within ourselves, there'd be some areas that pie starts dividing. And I think if we need to build for the year 2000 a new foundation, leadership. It's important because if not, we can have the majority to vote. But then started looking back, like, for example, in Corpus, you have for the first time 5 Mexicanos, city council. And look at the way they vote. Some establishment. Maybe once in a while they come around, but it's like winning the lottery. It's tough. We think we have progress. Yes, black and white. They're looking at actual numbers. How much money are they divided to this part of the community? How much money is they divided toward this side? Then you start looking. An example, look at the money they're going to put in for a budget. Let's say, for example, community block and money. See how much money is going this way. Then you have, when they have a bond election for street improvements, capital improvements for the city. And they put it in the ballot for people to go out and vote. But they might give us a little bit piece of the pie. And then all the money should get appropriated, and it takes 10 to 20 years before we get our street repaired. But there were priorities the other side of town, and those are the problems that we got. It's hard.
What is the most pressing issue facing Mexican Americans today?
Unity. That's it.
Okay.
Unity.
Black-brown relations. What are the underpinnings of tensions between Chicanos and blacks?
It's, you know, like, in this committee where I live at, I don't know if I'm, you know, we, like I said, they're dividing this committee, one side of the street, Negritos, blacks, Mexicanos, you know, in this neighborhood, an example, I used to sleep across the street about this, the black community. A friend of mine, Robert Bode, used to come over here and stay with us. We're always together. We can get together, work together. But there's some of the examples that I make, you know. The black community gets organized for a cause. They're gonna listen. Then we have the problem with the Mexicanos. Oh, that local, he's fighting for something that we don't need it. That's one opinion, and it spreads out to others. And it's like you read the paper, you all have different versions. But it's hard to get them on the table, and the only way you get them on the table is you're gonna eat. Comer juntos. I mean, when you pass the bread with la tortilla, acuérdate, lo que estamos hablando. We might have a round table discussion, but afterwards when we get out as hermanos, as brothers, we go out and fight for the things that is right for our community. That's what the black community do. They're organized, I mean, solid. You know, they might be low in numbers, but when it comes down to funding, programs, organizations, the funding is there. We can't sit on the table.
Chicanos and Mexicanos, what are the problems there, the underpinnings of tension?
You know, it's a sad thing, like, you know, the problems they have, like, in California, you know, the education, Then you have, you know, I've always felt this way. You know, we're not too far away from the border. It's around the corner. People come from Mexico to Estados Unidos, and they're treated like dogs. But we have other people from other countries. They can cross, come into our country, help them get finance for to become shrimpers. There's other culturas, cultures. They can get easy ways to get services. You know, I had relatives in Mexico, and it's a shame what they have to go through. You know, because of the government politics, the way El PRI and all that stuff happens up there. But we can do deals with them for oil. We can lend them millions of dollars to the government. It takes them a long time to get paid. Of course, they already paid it. But why can't we open those books when we can work and merge together? You know, of course, they say, well, it's going to cost too much for the welfare program. You got to remember all those programs are, is it tan cortando? They're cutting. But if you don't have that communication between Mexico and Estados Unidos, not only on financial banking stuff, but on human beings, I mean, this could be a better country. Of course, it's going to be a lot more people, but you know, an example, a person comes from Mexico. You ask them, can you do this? Yes, sir. Gracias, sí puedo. Puedes tirar esto, sí, sí, sí. Then you ask the Mexican, I don't want to do it. I can't do it, it's too hard. I'm not going to do it. And for money, something like that, you know. I think we need to work a lot closer and not, don't have National Guards holding the borders, you know. It's not right.
How about the
this land belongs to them.
How about relations with other Latinos, Puerto Ricans and Cubans? What are the underpinnings of tension there? You started talking a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, look at the Hollywood industry. If we talk, look at, you go back and do the research. We got so many Latinos in Hollywood. We got so many and so in athletics. Two Mexicanos como tú y yo, Mexicanos, pero vienen de allá de Puerto Rico, Venezuela. You got a bunch of them playing in the major leagues. How many true Mexicanos do we have in the ABA? How many true Mexicanos do we have actually playing, you know, major league ball? But we're Latinos, hermanos, we cross, you know. And it's like, eres café, eres blanco, y eres negro, negro. But the tension would be that, you know, there's always going to be problems. As we get closer to the year 2000, our gobierno, our government is always coming up with different ways how to divide us. You know, you talk about education, you always come up with a new testing, and it hurts the minorities. And it's existed for over 250 years, I say that, you know, that's a phrase that I use. Every time you grow in numbers, you find a way out of the lecture. I'll give you a better example. When you have only 3,000 registered voters here, by law, and then you see the power you're coming to, well, let's divide these precincts. And that's the division that we'll be coming to. For education, for example, how many Mexicanos can go out there and get bonded to do a highway? My paca. You don't have the guy with a suit that can say, oh, I'll learn you to get bonded. How many Mexicanos are in their positions in the banking? And how many Mexicanos are into the business like, I can collect your taxes? No, as an entity coming to city, county, school district, that's where we need to start. You might have a Mexicano as a vice president for a bank just because of numbers, but you go and ask him for a loan, no puedo. But here comes this bolillo that as a developer and has 2-3 times bankruptcy without mentioning, oh yeah, we help you out. And this is a problem that do still exist. You know, we might have some Mexicanos in those positions, but when you go, I hear an example, I went, more than 8 years probably. Me and my partner, Raymond, and another guy, we were trying to get a loan, $5,000. And I'm not gonna mention the bank. They gave us a stack of papers that we had to sign, it's like I'm sending my life away. And we had $5,000 in collateral. We just needed $5,000 to start a little business, do some editing, advertising stuff. We got discouraged. And it was a Mexicano. And we see it, you know, every day. Está duro. And it's gonna get a lot harder.
I know that you've been active in a lot of other things beyond electoral politics. I know that you oppose the sales tax. I know that you worked for, like, for this 18-year-old Rodriguez, who became the youngest school board member. And you've done a lot of things. Can you tell me some stories? Because I have that's the extent of the interview. But I know that you got a lot more stories that you may want to tell. How about a couple of them so we can wrap it up?
I'll give you one that's very interesting. This guy ran for judge, Pepe Robustan, Robert Vargas, and he became judge. He did all his science there on Concord Street. We did the science cell screening, we put him on the grass, says Zacata, and we did all night, we played pool, we drank beer. And then here in the people in Molina, where we did, right across here from Monopoles and Skinner, precinct 8, we put up a big sign. So Ramon Ortiz, all the persons who were endorsed in the community. And one of Barbara Vargas' campaign manager, Mexicano, an attorney, Pacano Fregar, he said, we don't want to associate with this guy here. So the guy did all the science, his name is Dicky Valdez. He's the brother of the district attorney now, Carlos Valdez. He came over to my house in his little red truck. He goes, hey, Bofa, I need to talk to you. This is my nickname. It's all about this thing. I said, I'm really disappointed. What happened? I said, well, I had a meeting with Robert Vargas and this guy. I didn't want to put that Robert Vargas' name as an endorsement. I said, Dicky, don't worry about it. I'm having a meeting with them tonight. They're having a little dance. I take care of it. So I walked into the Stardust Club. And that's pretty. But 7 to 8 guys, big guys in the bottom. Went directly to him and we talked. I said, what's the problem, Robert? He said, well, que esto, my campaign manager doesn't want to do this. I said, you know what, that's fine. I said, I told you, you didn't have to worry about Molina. Molina was in the bag. But you know what? Now it's going to be tough. But the room. Instead of the people that you know, having somewhere else, I mean, now you're gonna have to have somebody in Molina because we're not gonna take care of you. You might win throughout the whole county, but in Molina, or something like that. And we got into a big discussion, and I never forget his wife, Sandra. She started crying. She said, deja lo que quieran hablar de them, do it his way. He knows what he's doing. So we finally came out to an agreement, and the signs stood up. And half of the day of the campaign for Robert Vargas now became a judge, was there with Molina with us. And he won big time numbers, you know. That's one experience, and there was another one like Carlos Valdez.
So this precinct is tied to Robstown?
It's tied to the whole county. It depends on the area you run.
But this JP? Is this a JP?
No, it's a district court.
Oh, district court?
Yeah, it's a whole,
okay,
it's a whole county.
Gotcha.
So he's still there. He's been there for about 8 years already, judge. And he still remembers that story, you know, because it was like it was yesterday. Carlos Valdez, a better example from the barrio. Young Mexicanito Piojo, no money, the same way as I did. But in Concord Street again, we did the cell screen, barbecue, and organized. The odds were against him. Carlos Valdez from West Oso. But he became the county attorney, the first Mexicano. We worked day and night. We'd go to the courthouse, and we'd be sure they would have Carlos Valdez's name in the loudspeaker every day. Carlos Valdez, looking for Carlos Valdez. There was one way to get the name out to the county employees, his name, you know. He made a commitment. He would get a stack of 100 cards every day, Carlos Valdez put in his pocket, and go everywhere and pass them out. I remember he used to play softball, Carlos Flequito. He'd come back with a cigar after the game, just do tannings, bowling and máquina, you know. And we sit there and we discuss about, como va a ser if he wins? And I never forget that we were there at the International Hotel, and they were already declaring he was out. And Carlos is a very religious person, creía bastante la fe. And he got everybody together and he said, you know, let's have a prayer. And he started praying, giving thanks to God, to the people that helped him. And after that, within a couple of minutes, he was in a runoff. I think he became the county attorney. There's a lot of stories, I remember, you know, when my sister went for school board. You know, when you have a name like, for example, Loyola, you know, they say, well, they call us the Kennedys, the Loyola brothers, you know. And it's something that you feel like, well, con orgullo. You know, I sat down during the week and I was seeing a program of Robert Kennedy. And it reminds me, well, they call me I'm Jack. you know. Robert, my brother Danny, the superintendent. And Teddy, my brother Jesse. And they're always calling, you know, the Kennedy's Eagles, Kennedy's Eagles, Kennedy, you know. I had this guy that would go, he laid carpet. And his heroes were like, and this is a true story. We're talking about the Kennedys. This guy started the name of the Kennedys. And his, the passenger side, the sun visor, he had two pictures. Uno, Carlos Valdez, and David Loyola. Y él dice, esos son los Kennedy. That was the way they started, you know. Because they believe in you. Can you be there for them to fight? And there's a lot of other experience, like when my sister went to school board. A couple of days before the election, she came in very disappointed. You know, okay, they painted all my signs. Somebody threw some paint at her signs. And from there, I said, what? It becomes an issue. Con el comentario, se enojando, que lo están tirando con esto y esto. They turned everything around, and she became a board member. There's a lot of stories, you know, that if only the walls would speak, the experiences and the buenas memorias. It's like in 93, when I ran for city council the first time, there was a guy named Jose Andrew Gutierrez. And I got this tape, and I treasured it with me. And I wish I could speak like him. Me falta. But me puedo defender. Yo creo que sí. I heard this commercial on KCT Radio, a good friend of Manuel Davila. And I think it was a 60-second spot. And I would have it in my room, in my coma, beside my cassette player. In the mornings, I would get up, and I'm a diabetic, take my insulin, get ready, and get my cup of coffee, my cigarette, and I put the tape. Es que en este cuando, you know. And that would build me up to go out in the street and talk to people, you know. And sometimes, like I say to myself, I wish I would have lived in the earth, the Emiliano Zapata, Pancho Villa. I probably would have been dead a long time ago. Because you see the things that they fought for, you know. Then you go back to the history, you know. They make Derek Crockett, all those guys famous when they were nobodies, you know. Eran por los que corrían. Pero la historia lo decían ellos como, oh, there was los héroes, you know. There were a lot of Mexicanos. The fire in the Alamo, game we never heard of, you know, things like that. But getting back to that, you know, it was something that would build me up to go out and talk to people. And there were some times you had your up and downs. But if you listen to that tape, it would, you know, then speak. The first time I heard it, I was driving. You know, each thing you hear to myself, I wish I could talk that way, come across that way. But I think I do it in a different way, you know. I mean, but I know when I walk into a place, they know who I am, and they know what I stand for, and they know I'm from Molina, and they know that I don't forget where I come from. And they can depend on that, you know. That there's always been people that should motivate other people to do things in life. That's the way it's been in my life.
Commissioner, I want to thank you for the time, the interview.
I enjoyed it. Had good fun with it.